Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us.
Hi, Sophie. Welcome to What You Read Next podcast.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So happy to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, gosh. A little bit about myself. Well, I've been writing a long time. Since 2007, I feel like that's, I don't know why I always have to think about it. Just the number should be automatic, I guess, but just because it's been so long.
Yeah.
I've been writing and I write a little bit of everything, you know, whatever catches my fancy. If I'm reading in a genre a lot, odds are I'm going to want to write something in that genre or similar to that genre. So I think that's why I've written everything, you know, historical romance, I've written contemporary, I've written young adult, I've written paranormal romance, new adult. Young adult I've enjoyed because I've been able to do different types of things in young adult. While there's always romance in the stories, I've done fantasy, paranormal, kind of a dystopian set in the near future. So that's who I am as a writer, which it's sort of hard to separate. I bet a lot of writers feel this way. It's sort of difficult to separate who we are from our persona as a writer, because even when I'm not writing, I'm thinking about stories and observing the world, and stories are always there. Stories are life.
I love this. So were you always a reader growing up and read all diverse genres? Did you gravitate to something like maybe like a simple love story, or, you know, or just in general?
I feel like I came late to reading. I remember being in a bookstore. I think it was a B. Dalton, and that probably dates me. Yeah. And I was like 11 or 12, like early junior high. Mm-hmm. And I was bored. I got dragged into the bookstore by my cousin, who immediately, you know, went to her preferred reading sections. And I just was sort of idling, and she kind of mocked me. Like, she jeered at me because I think I drifted over to the children's books, as in like picture books, because that was like the last thing I had read. I was 12 years old, but I really had not moved into reading novels or genre fiction or anything. And she made fun of me, and she dragged me from the young children's books over into the YA section, young adult section. And she was like pulling out Judy Blume and Beverly Cleary. And she was like, these are what you should be reading, you know, in a very punishing tone. So I bought some and I read some, and I started reading a little bit, but I have to still say the first book that sucked me back into reading, or into reading really for the first time beyond early, you know, beyond 5 years old, was I hijacked a romance, a historical romance novel off my grandmother's bedside table. The only thing, I couldn't even tell you who it is anymore, which is so sad because I remember elements of it. I remember it was set in Louisiana. It was one of those historical romances set in Louisiana, but the heroine had been fleeing. She fled the French Revolution to go to Louisiana. And the thing I remember is the hero she met also in France, and they were hiding and running for their lives. And they hid within beneath the floorboards of a house. And it was the two of them in this very small amount of space for like a couple days under the floorboards of a house. How crazy is that for your like meet cute and you're like, here you are in a romance setting. And of course things happened. And that's just where you like suspend your disbelief. You forget about the fact that you're stuck under the floorboards with a hot man. You forget about things like that you might smell at this point, or how do you go to the bathroom? Like none of that entered your head.
Yeah.
You're just swept up with the, like, oh, my, I mean, like, I think I was 13 maybe at the time reading this. And it was, you know, a historical romance novel. Like, it was fully graphic. And, you know, she pretty much got it on under the floorboards with this guy. And I just remember being like gaga over it. It was so marvelous. Yeah, but how did that, I don't know. Even the mechanics of it, I'm not sure how that happened.
Oh my God, I'm just thinking about it. I'm like, suspend disbelief. That's just what you want to do. Don't think about how you
exactly. I feel like I need to go online and put it out there to the world of romance readers.
Yeah.
Which, you know how avid we all are. Yes. And ask them, like, who remembers this book? What was it called? Who wrote it? But at the same time, sometimes when you get those, like, I don't know what you want to call it. If you call them gateway books, sometimes you revisit your gateway book, your gateway romance book. And it just isn't necessarily everything you remembered at the age of 13 or 14. And you just almost need to leave them in the past, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I got like a, you know, I can read some books and I'm like, I've been reading around the same around a teenager, 12 to 13. And so I read Sweet Valley High. And so I've been revisiting them and they're so problematic, but I love them.
Oh, I know.
Read them every month. Like there will come a new serial, like a new book, and that's my only thing. And I have to tell you, it's like, do I go back? Like I'm going back every so often because I'm like, you can read them in a sitting, but I'm like, they're so problematic. But at the time, they were great books, you know.
I know. I mean, they're what, you know, Sarah McLean and I like to call them the bananas. You know, these are banana stories, and they're so memorable for that reason, even though, like you said, they are problematic and they have things that you wouldn't write today. But even whenever I talk about it, like talking about it with you, I'm like, you know what? I want to write a book where the hero and the heroine are trapped beneath the floorboards. I don't know. It's just crazy is good, you know?
Close proximity. It's just one floorboard, you know? So I think
exactly
that can write.
Isn't that oh my gosh, it is forced proximity, like in the most extreme way.
Yeah. Yes. You know, I read some historical fiction where they're like underneath the sword. So I feel like that's just like just, you know, just taking it, just adding some love story to it. So
right. Exactly.
So cool. You can imagine, you can do a reimagining of it. I love this. So you just wrote, this summer you released a couple of books. So 16 Scandals is a YA historical romance. Tell us all about it.
Oh, well, you know, it just came out a few weeks ago. It is my first historical young adult novel. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did write a historical young adult fantasy series that felt kind of like a medieval setting, but it was, you know, it was a fantasy world. Yeah. This is the first time I've ever written it is a Regency set YA romance. And it was so much fun. I'm typically write historical romances, of course, where the heroines are over 18. Mm-hmm. I enjoy writing historical romances where there's even, I have one where it's a much older heroine. She's almost 40. The Scandal of It All is the one I'm thinking of. But sometimes, you know, in writing historical romances, the heroines are young because it's sort of the convention of the time. You know, they're 19, 20, early 20s. So I wrote 16 Scandals where she is 16. She is kind of that fresh from the schoolroom, ready and looking forward to her come out into society. And that gets delayed. The book begins on her 16th birthday. And this is kind of my wink to 16 Candles, the 80s film, where they forgot, you know, Molly Ringwald's character, Sam, they forgot her birthday. Mm-hmm. So it's not in my YA Regency 16 Scandals, they didn't forget her birthday. They just decided it really wasn't important enough because the older sister's getting married. They have another older sister who's already out and having a season, and the mother, who's very much like a Mrs. Bennet type character, is like, I just can't even deal with you turning 16 and coming out right now. That's just too much on my plate. So we're going to focus on your sister's wedding and your other sister who's out in society. So she decides to have a wild night, grabs her best friend, and they take off for Vauxhall. So it's essentially a book that takes place in 24 hours, the majority of the book. And it's her wild night at Vauxhall. And of course she meets somebody because, you know, yeah. Sophie Jordan isn't going to write a YA without some romance in it. It has an adorable cover. If you haven't seen it, you should look it up. It has this very secretive, the heroine Primrose is in a mask, you know, because it's Foxhall and she feels it's safer for her to go masked. And she's secretly kind of grabbing onto the hero's hand on the cover, holding it, like they're side by side. Mm-hmm. And of course I like screamed a little when I saw that scene in Bridgerton, because I'm like, it's like my cover, you know, when they're staring, they're in the art gallery staring at, I believe they're staring at some of the portraits, but anyway, they, in Bridgerton kind of, you know, very clandestine, hold each other's hands. And that's the cover basically of 16 Scandals, and very, you know, like a very kind of graphic cartoon cover. I love it. It's adorable. So I don't know. I just wanted to write something that at this, it's familiar because I've always written historical romances, yet at the same time, it's new because it's for teens as well. You know, of course adults could read it, but I was like, it's time for some of the teen readers out there to feel, to get their toes wet into the historical romance genre.
Yes, I love it. I think it's a good introduction to the historical romance. And I feel like once they find it, they can actually go back to your backlist and read some grown-up books, you know?
Yeah, I think it'd be great, you know, for that 17, 16-year-old teen cutting her teeth, starts with 16 Scandals and is like, I want to read more books like this. And then her... you know, her mind will blow. Yeah. Yes. Not just all of my backlist, but everybody else, right? Like everybody, yeah. I mean, the entire historical romance genre waits for the teen reader who reads and enjoys 16 Scandals.
Yes. Oh, so good. So let's talk about the book now, which is the first book in a series. So tell us about the first book and then what can we expect for the rest of the series?
Well, it was, I mean, the previous series, The Rogue Files was a 7-book series. I had no intention for it to last as long as it did, but it did. So it was time for something new. And I had a lot, I kind of created a town, a large village named Shropshire or Shropshire. Mm-hmm. And these characters are all going to kind of be revolving around this town. And I had the idea for the first book that it's a 4-book series and it's sort of all springboards. It springs from the fact that the Duke in this neighborhood, in this community of Shropshire, has passed away, and his son, who then becomes the next Duke, discovers that he is actually not legitimate. So mm-hmm. he, and I really wanted to write that character of write that hero who's grown up with the silver spoon in his mouth and has had every advantage, has been brought up to believe he's the next Duke, and then in fact becomes a Duke when his father dies, and then finds out, nope, sorry, big mistake, you were born prior to your parents actually legitimately marrying. So he loses everything. And it was like the idea. So I had the idea of that hero that's just so, I mean, down on his luck, been stripped of everything, title, lands, money, wealth. And then the title came to me, the book. I'm like, so he's sort of like down on his luck. He goes down. And I was like, wait, he goes down? And then I was like, the Duke goes down. Mm-hmm. And then I laugh because it sounds so dirty.
Yeah.
And so for, you know, there's definitely a double meaning there. The Duke goes down. And then I sent that title off. I shot it off to my editor who, you know, conversed with, you know, the team at my team at Avon, and they right away jumped on it. They're like, yes, we want this title. I'm like, it's a little naughty. Are we going to have any pushback or any of the distributors going to not want to carry it in their stores? Cause it sounds a little naughty. And they kind of checked with all the accounts. They're like, nope, it's great. And I was like, oh my gosh. It makes me blush and I love it. So The Duke Goes Down is the title of the first book in the Duke Hunt series. So this this role, this position of the Duke is therefore, you know, with book one, it's, you know, they don't have a Duke. They're looking for the next in line. Mm-hmm. So that sort of is the overarching, it's a little plot device through all four of the books, like Trent, who is going to be the next Duke? Who's going to take his place? So that comes up through every book. But the first book, it's, you know, it's the erstwhile Duke, the guy who lost it all. And his love interest, the heroine, is, I call her, it's my Lady Vicar book. So, you know, women were not allowed to be vicars at this time, but her father has been, you know, a little dementia, a little like not quite himself since his stroke. So she acts as the vicar. She writes all the sermons, which he, you know, just kind of parrots up there, but she is, for all intents and purposes, functioning as the vicar of Shropshire. And then there's the, you know, once has been Duke. And everybody wants to know, though, Laura, this is an important question. Everybody wants to know if the Duke actually does go down in this book.
Yes, I want to know. And I know the answer, but.
Okay. I just think when you have a title like that, you're promising something.
Yes.
And far be it from me not to deliver upon that promise.
Yes. It is a promise.
I think when my editor emailed back, yes, we want this title, she was like, there better be some amazing. And I was like, don't worry, taken care of. It will happen.
Yeah.
I will not deliver upon that as a writer.
Yes, you deliver. So it was great. So what can we expect for the next book in the series? Now that I'm like, oh my gosh, what is next?
I mean, it's fun, you know, like I said, building a new series. There's a cast of characters that have been introduced. And then of course there's the question of when is the Duke going to show up? Who is he? The second book is my heroine's best friend. It's Mercy. So she is the next, you see quite a bit of Mercy in The Duke Goes Down. So she is the next book in the series. And I don't know, I don't want to be too spoily. Her hero you haven't met yet, but you know, you didn't meet him in The Duke Goes Down, but you, so he's a new character. And you'll see some of the other characters, like I said, but you know, Gwen, who's the lady blacksmith. I just had a lot of fun in the series taking the roles of women and putting them in, you know, unexpected places. Having a lady vicar is a little unexpected. Mercy is, for all intents and purposes, she runs a farm. She runs a large property outside the village. And then there's Gwen Cully, who is a lady blacksmith. You'll see her. My plan is for her to be the third book in the series.
I was gonna ask, it was like, is she gonna get
Yes, she is. She's the plan. And then the Duke will show up eventually. So, you know, they're tracking him down. They think he might be in New Guinea, or they've heard he's in Canada. They're not sure, you know, this like distant relation they're trying to track down.
Yeah, so I think that's like a fun part of it. It's like, when is a Duke coming in?
yeah it's gonna be a surprise. There's a twist on that too, so yeah, it's exciting. I can't believe, so I'm about to start the third. I'm revising the second. I'm revising Mercy's story right now, and then I'm about to start Gwen. So it's so funny, you know, being here today talking with you about The Duke Goes Down, but I'm already hard at work, you know, finishing the second one, about to start the third one. The next time we talk, like the whole series, you know, we could be talking about book two next, and the series will be done. So I'll know all the secrets, and I'll have to be careful that I don't, you know, vomit things out.
Yeah. So you're in the series because the role files with some books, and so do you keep a series Bible? How do you keep track of all the different details that, you know, take place?
Sure. No, that's really a good question. I did note and made a lot of notes since I was beginning a series. I was like, I am not gonna, you know, get myself into a corner and what did that character look like? What eye color did I give them? Who has a sibling? You know, so I did start a notebook for The Duke Hunt, you know, it's a four book series, but I did start it with The Duke Goes Down. Mm-hmm. I didn't necessarily do that with The Rogue Files. I never knew it was going to be seven books, so that I definitely ended up spending a lot of time flipping through copies of the early books in The Rogue Files, and even asking some of my readers that I interact with on social media, like, hey, do you remember, did I ever say what so-and-so's eye color was, or if so-and-so, did I give their age? You know, readers are super helpful.
Yes. Readers will pay attention to details that, you know, sometimes you forget. You're like, oh my gosh. Like, oh, so-and-so is supposed to have a baby. And you're like,
I know. Yeah. I was like, oops. I've stepped into it before. There is a book where I was like, a older title of mine where the heroine and the hero had twins. And I think I mentioned that the twins were one boy and one girl. And then I think I mentioned two girls. Like, I did get caught. Like, you know, things, even after you write them, then you read them, and then you proof them, and then you edit them, and then you have other people editing and proofing that have read your previous books too. There's still stuff that can fall through the cracks.
Yeah. So it's interesting. It's a lot of work. So I commend you, you know, Bowling Worlds and Bowling Universe, and just, you know, getting readers' thoughts in the story. So.
Oh, thank you.
So let's see. What are a couple books that you recommend for our listeners to pick up?
Oh my goodness, I could talk books forever. I love this part. I love recommending other authors. You know, I cut my teeth on, you know, old school historical romances like Johanna Lindsay, but I think there's so many good new titles and newer authors. I'm very excited. Diana Quincy has a book that's releasing on the same day as The Dew Goes Down. So you'll have to pick them up both, everybody. It's called The Viscount Made Me Do It. And it's, you know, I mentioned enjoying writing historical heroines that kind of come from unexpected places and positions. So her heroine is a working class bone setter. She's the daughter of Arab merchants. So I'm really excited to read The Viscount Made Me Do It. I don't even know, like, a heroine that's a bone setter just kind of blows my mind. Excited about that. Oh my gosh, I'm so jealous. And I talked to Diana, but I haven't read it. So I'm so excited.
So good. I love The Bone Setter. I love, like, she was like, her family was like, oh, no, you're not going to get married to some Viscount.
You know? Oh my gosh, like, I can't believe it. It sounds so exciting. I like historical romances that are you read the genre, but they don't all have to feel alike, you know? And that's what I try to bring to the table as a writer, to write a book that feels different than my previous book, and reading books that feel different than other historical romances. There's a whole rainbow of them out there. So I'm excited, so excited, and so jealous you already read it. I read The Pool Boy by Nikki Sloan. See, I like books with heat, and Nikki Sloan for sure. The Pool Boy was great. I love the whole plot dynamic of an older heroine and a younger hero. Mm-hmm. So if someone tells me that, whether it's a historical romance or contemporary, I will read it for that reason alone. You know what I read early in the pandemic? That this book has actually been out a couple of years, but I somehow had missed it, because there really aren't a lot of post-apocalyptic romances, and I get it. I get why. It can feel grim. But this book isn't super dark, even though it is a post-apocalyptic romance. And it's called Last Light by Claire Kent. And it's a standalone. And I just devoured it. I loved it. Loved it. I mean, it's the hero and the heroine on the road together, trying to get to, you know, a place, safety, you know, kind of the basic plot line for a lot of post-apocalyptic, you know, movies and TV shows. Like, their goal is to get somewhere where there's safety. And they rely on each other for survival. And of course there's threat at every turn. I love that. It's great. What else? Do you read Robin Lovett?
No, actually I feel like I have some of her books in my queue, but I have not read. So
as someone who loves, like, banana plot lines, and that's what, you know, she's like your mom, because she's writing now, she's current, but whatever you read by her is going to be bananas. It's going to, like, have that old school banana factor that be new and contemporary. And, well, in her case, her stuff is futuristic. So she's doing these series of novellas that she's bringing out right now. The first one was Alien Quarantine Rescue. And that's what it is. Like, her titles are very, like, let you know. Like, this is an alien quarantine rescue. So it's bananas. It's like a heroine that's living in isolation after, like, a global pandemic. And these aliens arrive and they of course are immune, and they also offer a cure, you know, if you get busy with them. Yeah. I mean, like, it's simple yet not, and just brilliant at the same time. I love it. I love that. And I mean, I don't know, some people may be like, oh, I don't want to read anything about like a pandemic or a quarantine, but I think it's all in the execution, right? Like, yeah. As long as it feels hopeful, it doesn't feel grim. And Robin Lovett does it. Last Light by Claire Kent does it. And she also has a whole like alien series where there's an aphrodisiac book where the hero and the heroine are mortal enemies and they're fighting like in space. One spaceship attacks the other, and then the two of them, they crash land, just the hero and the heroine, on a planet that is basically a love planet. It's an aphrodisiac planet. Like, the mere air in the planet makes you overcome with like lust, and you have to get it on. And they are mortal enemies. They've been killing each other and fighting in battle like 20 minutes ago before they crash landed on this planet. So that is a total bananas plot. I loved it so much. But like, I love the idea of this love planet too. Like, it's in the oxygen, but if you drink the water on the planet, it's even like injecting it into your blood quicker and faster into your system. Like, you're more aroused and more in pain if you don't, release. I wish I could think what the title of that one is, but as long as you know it's Robin Lovett, like, you'll find, and that's like her Love Planet series, like, you'll find it.
I loved it. Oh my gosh. Thank you for the recommendations. They're like adding on to my TBR. I love the pool boy, by the way. Any type of reverse age gap when there's like an older heroine, younger.
Yes.
Like, I live for it. I'm like, this is what I need, you know?
Yes. And Nikki Sloan, she's just such a good contemporary romance writer too. Like, her stuff feels so grounded and so real.
Yeah, she takes a lot of risks, and the risks pay off. Like, they're good.
Yes, yes.
Awesome. So, Sophie, tell us where you can find you online.
Well, I'm on Facebook, but I enjoy Instagram a lot. I try to, I keep my stories pretty active. I'm so Sophie Jordan on Instagram. I am on Twitter, but I'm less active there. As so very Sophie. But if you're on Instagram, so Sophie Jordan, I'd love to see you. And on Facebook, I have a private reader group. You just have to send a request called Sophie's Sirens. If you would type that in, it would pop up. And you can just request to join if y'all want to follow me there and catch my ramblings.
Yay, I'm joining.
Yay, I'm so glad.
Thank you. Thank you, Sophie, for being on the show.
Thank you for having me today. This was fun. I'll talk books with you anytime.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support the podcast. For book recommendations, author interview archives, and other fun book resources and tips, please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com. The What You Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Network. To discover new shows to listen and love, please visit frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What You Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more, or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.